Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, September 1st, 2017. Kenya's Supreme Court nullifies the results of the country's presidential election.
A declaration is hereby issued that the presidential election held on 8th August 2017 was not conducted in accordance with the Constitution and the applicable law, rendering the declared results invalid, null, and void.
And Kenyans living in South Sudan express mixed reaction to the court ruling.
Now we have seen where there is the reality to say the truth. Even a small kid is celebrating for what has happened.
This is the best ruling that has ever happened in Kenya for decades of electoral malpractices. We've been enduring poor leadership due to poorly managed polls.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The Kenyan Supreme Court has cancelled the results of the August presidential election and ordered a new election to be held within 60 days. The court ruled that Kenya's Electoral Commission was responsible for irregularities and dishonesties in the transmission of the election results. From Nairobi, VOA's Jill Craig has more.
Kenyans reacted with celebration, frustration, and shock Friday after the Supreme Court, in a 4-2 decision, ordered a do-over of last month's presidential poll. Chief Justice David Maraga made the announcement.
A declaration is hereby issued that the presidential election held on 8th August 2017 was not conducted in accordance with the Constitution and the applicable law, rendering the declared results invalid, null, and void.
Kenya's Electoral Commission had said incumbent President Uhuru Kenyatta defeated opposition leader Raila Odinga by a margin of about 1.4 million votes. But Maraga stated in his ruling that Kenyatta was not validly elected and that the Electoral Commission would need to conduct a credible, fresh presidential election within 60 days. It was a ruling in favor of the petitioners, Odinga and his NASA coalition, who have consistently argued that a hacked voting system made for a stolen election.
It's a very historic day for the people of Kenya, and by extension, for the people of the continent of Africa. For the first time in history of African democratization, a ruling has been made by a court nullifying irregular elections of a president. This is a precedent-setting ruling.
Kenyatta expressed disappointment in the decision, but vowed to go back again to the people with the same agenda.
I have said millions of Kenyans queued, made their choice, and six people have decided that they will go against the will of the people. But the court has made its decision. We respect it. We don't agree with it.
Odinga reiterated that his coalition has no faith in the Electoral Commission as currently constituted.
They have committed criminal acts. Most of them actually belong to jail. And therefore, we are going to ask for prosecution of all the Electoral Commission officers who have caused this monstrous crime against the people of Kenya.
University of Nairobi lecturer Herman Manyora disagrees with this approach.
Elections are not perfect by their nature, even in the election of the Pope. Nothing is perfect. And therefore, you cannot immediately begin to think about jailing people. I think that's extreme.
But even the Electoral Commission's chairman didn't rule it out.
The Commission invites the Office of the Director of Public Prosecution to urgently and expeditiously investigate and prosecute any of our staff that may have been involved in violation of the Election Offences Act.
Wafula Chebukati also requested the court provide its full judgment as soon as possible in order for his team to prepare for fresh elections. 24 heads of mission, including those from the U.S., Britain, Canada, and the European Union, released a statement that the decision demonstrated Kenya's resilient democracy and commitment to the rule of law, and urged the new presidential poll be free, fair, credible, and peaceful. After the ruling, Kenya's stock market briefly stopped trading after blue-chip shares fell by the 10% limit. Supporters of Odinga poured into the streets, cheering and waiting for another chance to elect their candidate. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
Some Kenyans in the South Sudanese capital, Juba, welcomed the Supreme Court ruling that nullified the country's presidential elections. Kenyans we talked to say they are ready for new polls, and many are skeptical about the credibility of the Kenyan Electoral Commission.
And it has portrayed Kenya as a country that believes in justice and democracy. We, however, want to condemn the election observers that asked us to accept and move on even before the presidential elections results were declared, especially John Kerry and his group. We want to ask him to rethink his stand and not rush to decisions again.
Any government that will listen to its people, that government will be respected. And any government that will not listen to the wills of its people, then the people will react. But today, Kenya has experienced one of the most magnificent rulings in the history, that however much power you have, whatsoever may in the kind of leadership and the power you hold, that the rule of law is the rule of democracy.
Actually, I'm very happy today for what has happened to Kenya. What they have made, it's according to the will of Kenyans people. Now we have seen where there is the reality to say the truth. Even a small kid is celebrating for what has happened.
This is the best ruling that has ever happened in Kenya for decades of electoral practices. We've been enduring poor leadership due to poorly managed polls, but we are so lucky today that the ruling has favored the people of Kenya in the sense that we have had to get justice served to us as the people of Kenya. I personally went to vote. I'm so glad that at least I'm a bit pleased today because the ruling has favored my decision as a Kenyan. Our take is anybody who participated in electoral malpractices should be punished by the rule of law.
Today I'm very, very, very happy because of the decision which has been made. If you check even the television, you see even kids are celebrating. What does that mean? If the Kenyans, they don't need you, it means you have something which you are not doing for them. So Kenya is a democratic country, and we need that democracy to be practiced.
Let the will of Kenyans be upheld, as the court have decided. I would also like to appreciate the former president, the acting president, Uhuru Kenyatta, for accepting the ruling of the court. Also, I would like to urge Kenyans, as we go for the elections, let also come out in large numbers and let's demonstrate and set our precedents in Africa and in the whole world and show how democracy should be working.
I am telling you, we are going to go back the election the same way we did in the first day. And Kenyans are going to come out the same way they did. And they will choose a leader of their own choice. And we are telling the world, more so the African leaders, who stay in power in a monarchy way of suppressing people into deciding who their kind of leaders they want. We are now sending a precedent. We are sending an example that it's all not lost when you go or when you pursue justice through the courts. But the courts must also be respected because the judgment of the court is based on the evidence.
Those are voices of Kenyans in Juba weighing on the Kenya's High Court ruling that nullifies last month's presidential election results and calls for new polls to be held within 60 days. Tito Justin collected that audio in Juba. Meanwhile, in South Sudan, one opposition leader is saying that it's not possible for the government to conduct free and fair elections in 2018. South Sudan Information Minister Michael Makui argues the government is ready to hold elections in 6 months' time. Nabil Biajo has more for VOA from Juba.
Opposition politician Peter Mayen Majongdit says credible elections can only be held when the government has restored peace and security in South Sudan and its institutions are reformed. Information Minister Makwe acknowledged before reporters in Juba on Wednesday that many provisions of the agreement on the resolution of the conflict in the Republic of South Sudan have not been implemented, but insists the government is on track to hold elections once the transitional period ends in 6 months.
Some of you may be asking, are we going to run elections or are there no elections? The government is in the process of implementing the agreement. For us, we say we are going for elections.
There has been a push by IGAD to revitalize the 2015 peace agreement. Makwei says the revitalization forum has only two options.
Either to squeeze all these activities which are not yet done, or drop some of them, and we go for elections as scheduled in the agreement, or else we review the time frame with the aim of extending it so that the agreement is fully implemented, and thereafter we go for elections.
James Okuk, a political science lecturer at the University of Juba, says IGAD cannot and should not allow the Transitional Government of National Unity to hold elections as insecurity and political instability persist.
So far, the IGAD itself that has mediated the peace agreement that brought the Tigono is talking of revitalization, not election. There is no way the Tigono can conduct the election because the JEMEC will just say no and there is nothing that the Tigono can do. If they insist that they want to go ahead, the JEMEC will declare the peace agreement collapse, and that will take us to an undesirable situation.
Okuk says the government cannot conduct free elections before the peace agreement is fully implemented.
If the agreement has not been implemented, especially the security arrangement part of the agreement, it means there will never be a conducive environment to conduct the election. The other thing is the funding, the money. The JEMEC has also said that they have lack funding, and the government has been saying all along that there is no money to implement the agreement. The free environment is not there, the funding is not there, and also the people who are supposed to vote, above a million of them are refugees. So how will you carry election in such an environment? It is not viable at all.
Peter Mayen Majongdit, who chairs the opposition People's Liberal Party, agrees. Majongdit says the government must reform its institutions before free and fair elections can be held.
To go for elections is completely unreasonable because the implementation of the agreement hasn't taken place. Most of the provisions of the agreement have not happened. And we can go for elections with an ill electoral system, with an ill judiciary.
South Sudan's judiciary is not functioning because the vast majority of judges have been on a strike for months. Machundit says, without a strong and independent judiciary capable of handling election disputes, there cannot be free and fair elections.
The first priority is that the government should ensure that it implement peace, it restore peace, and it has to embark in institutional reforms that include reforms within the judiciary, reforms within the electoral system, so that election commissions is completely independent. So we really will not accept, nor will we allow the country to go into a symbolic election.
Machundit also says national security laws must be amended so that the people are free from intimidation and harassment by security operatives before elections are held. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, South Sudanese lawmakers comment on the country's budget. That story is coming up next.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
should primary school be free?
Yes, because it's the foundation of education, so every foundation should be free, given to everybody, should be free.
Yes.
totally free. This is because most, especially the low class in Kenya, anywhere in Africa, you find that they have very many kids and they have no the capital to take them to school. And
I strongly condemn the freeness of primary schools. Why? Because mostly I can say free things are never better. They will never push you.
I think it should be free because here in Malawi, most of the families are poor.
Don't think so, because in primary is the foundation of education. And we know anything free is expensive at the end of it all.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Opposition politicians say the 46 billion South Sudanese pound budget passed by lawmakers earlier this week is unrealistic. 44% of the budget is earmarked for security and defense. Waki Simon Wudu has this report for VOA from Juba.
Opposition politicians say the 2017-2018 fiscal year budget will neither improve the economy nor the lives of ordinary citizens. Peter Mayen Majongdit heads the opposition People's Liberal Party, or PLP.
Education, health is underfunded. And the other fact that also remains that up to now, South Sudanese citizens are going for 5 months without salaries, and that the salary does not even cover the basic needs of the citizens, even per a week.
Mayen says lawmakers often overlook one important procedure whenever they hammer out a new budget.
The parliament should have called demand from executive to be more transparent. They should have demand how much revenue that is being collected from the oil and how much revenue that is being collected from non-oil revenue. So this is a question that the parliament should demand, that where do the oil money go? So you can't just go on setting a budget without knowing how much exactly you have.
Mayen does not buy the government's argument that it has no money, pointing out it takes in revenue every day from on-border fees, international airport fees, and taxes on goods and services. The budget includes a deficit of 14 billion South Sudanese pounds, which is about 30% of the total budget. Wani Buyu, Undersecretary of South Sudan's Finance and Economic Planning Ministry, says the government intends to raise 32 billion South Sudanese pounds funds from oil and non-oil revenues to fund the budget, but he does not know where the remaining 14 billion South Sudanese pounds will come from.
At times we also go around to look for loans, but this particular time, very many friends have now pulled out, almost in supporting us.
Health was allocated only 2.2% of the budget, while education received only 4%. Mayen criticized lawmakers for allocating such meager resources to key departments for running a country and for not demanding transparency.
Even if you find that 40% is budgeted for security, why is the insecurities continue? Because the fact that the very people that keep security, the subordinates and the soldiers, are extremely suffering. They go without salary, they have no logistic cost, and even those who are deployed in operations are not taken care of. Their children are suffering, and they have no health. They have no access to health, neither their children have access to education.
Joseph Okel, chairperson of the Union of Sudan African Parties, or USAP, calls the budget ambiguous.
We look at the budget as just a procedural arrangement done by the government, but in reality, when you come to the expenditure, you find that all that has been approved in the budget not been given to the ministry concerned. That's why we are talking of peace being made so that we really go to the governance.
Mariel Awou, the former Deputy Minister of Finance in the National Government, is the Dean of the College for Economic Studies at the University of Juba. Awou says unless government improves the way it manages its resources, the country will continue to be in dire straits.
Since 2013, when the war erupted, budget has not been promptly executed. You know, the oil production was cut down almost 50% in the Unity and Upper Nile states, so resources shrunk, and the little resources were there, as I said it before, were being spent on first come, first served. There were no resources available
Above all, Mayen says the peace agreement must be implemented to the full letter and spirit of the agreement, including all of its economic reforms. Otherwise, he says the nation will never pull out of its economic crisis. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Some foreigners working in South Sudan say despite the economic crisis caused by the ongoing conflict, they are still able to support their families back home. Mungume Devsirwa Karinj has more for VOA from Kampala.
The 38-year-old Kenyan national, Matthew Ugumba, fixes a sink at NGO office in Juba. Ugumba says when he first arrived in Juba 4 years ago, the economy was in a better shape and was able to save a lot of money. Back then, Ugumba says he would save at least $1,000 each month, which would typically remit back to his relatives in Kenya's western county of Kisumu. But for the past year, job opportunities have been scarce, and the local South Sudanese pound has plummeted against the US dollar. Ugumba says that makes it extremely difficult to send money back home.
I'm a father of two, and I hustle here so as to educate my kids and also to support them in all ways possible as a parent. School fee, I pay for them. I buy books, clothes, and food.
After working for a year in Juba, Ugumba raised enough money to buy a plot of land back home in Kenya before the conflict broke out in Juba in December 2013. The fighting has led to widespread insecurity, political instability and economic chaos, forcing some 2 million South Sudanese to seek refuge in neighboring countries, including Kenya. 27-year-old Ugandan national Noah Adram works as an electrician in Juba. Adram says with the high exchange rate of the US dollar against the local currency, he cannot send home as much money as he did before the fighting erupted.
Our people back at home, they may think that we are working, we are wasting time, but we try our level best, say that we send them something, but it's not like the way we used. Because here, every time things are shooting up, you find the market, today the rate is at 10,000 something.
Despite the challenges, Adram manages to remit some money about each month or so to his family in the Kamuli district, some 200 kilometers from Uganda's capital, Kampala. Adram says he has been able to buy farmland in Uganda with the money he's earned in South Sudan. Adram's mother, 70-year-old Teopesta Muchara, takes care of her grandchildren in Kamuli, while Adrams lives and works in Juba. Speaking in her native Lusoga, Muchala says she's grateful for the money her son sends from South Sudan, even though it's not as much as it used to be.
You see, I'm diabetic, but he has been there for me to buy medicine whenever I'm sick. He buys us sugar, soap, paraffin, and other needs whenever we are in need. These young children you are seeing here are orphans, and Noah has been paying for their school fees and other needs. He has really been very helpful more than any of my other children.
Adram's 21-year-old sister, Esther Altubera, is also grateful for his help.
He used to buy for me books, pencils, pens, everything. All the academic things he was the only one to give me since my dad died a long time when I was still young. So he was like my dad, if he wasn't around.
Adram feels his greatest achievement has been to bring his two older brothers to Juba. He says one is a trader while the other is a mason.
I had also to give a hand to those whom I can. It has been a big achievement to the family and the community. So when they see me, they don't appreciate them, they appreciate me who gave them a hand.
Adram notes remittances are also good for the Ugandan government, since they take a portion of the money. Thousands of Ugandans and Kenyans have been working in South Sudan since 2005. That is when the war between the then Southern Sudan and Khartoum ended after the signing of the Comprehensive Peace Agreement. For VOA News, I am Mugume Devsirwa Karinj in Kampala, Uganda.
Cameroon has freed three Anglophone leaders detained over the ongoing strike in parts of the country. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports on the reaction in the affected regions and what comes next.
Neighbors, relatives, admirers, and family members pray at the Yaoundé Tam Tam weekend residence of Paul Aya Abini, former Advocate General of the Supreme Court of Cameroon and National Chairman of the Popular Action Party, who was arrested in January 2017 and locked up at the defense headquarters in Yaoundé. After gaining his freedom Thursday, Paul finds it difficult to speak. He says the only thing he can say besides what the family spokesperson will tell VOA is that he is grateful to God. Paul looks tired and sick and has grown white hair all over his head and chin. His wife, Valentine Ndale Aya, says her husband had an infection while in detention. She says her husband, who was in very good health before his arrest, is now a cardiac patient and has to take at least 8 different medicines every morning for survival. She says since the crisis that almost took his life while under detention, Paul no longer sees well. Government spokesperson Issa Chiruma says President Biya took the decision because he wants peace to reign in Cameroon.
It stems from his resolve to give precedence to the values of peace, tolerance, dialogue, and humanism, which are the trademarks of our nation. The President of the Republic gave precedence to dialogue.
Paul and the others were arrested late last year and in January 2017 and accused of inciting violence during the protest in the northwest and southwest regions. They pleaded not guilty to the charges that included complicity in hostility against the homeland, secession, civil war, and campaigning for federalism. Activists and Anglophones called for their unconditional release. Defense counsel Luc Kissop says their release will open the way for renewed talks and end 9 months of crisis.
There is a need to foster peace and social dialogue, the need for people to go back to school. So the president has carried out a gracious measure as the father of the nation, and we must congratulate him. Those who have been released have families, they have friends, they have people who are expecting them, who want them to come back home.
Felix Ghana, who has not sent his children to school since January to press for the release of the leaders, says the government has shown signs it is now open for dialogue. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
That's our show for this Friday. We now leave you with the song Fiso Talaga by CJ Oman. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. We'd like to hear what you think about our show. Our email is southsudan@voanews.com. You can also check us on our Facebook page, South Sudan in Focus. You have a safe and peaceful weekend, and remember to join us on Monday for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Naindile kumkisa kede wedila na fursa finyar kukani ismu junu uwele duo fiza manzurufu fijana tani ismu junu uwele duo fiza manuhuru abutomu tumakawaja umatomu tumajalaba unyar kukde azuraba azu school azu medresa italaya azu mustashfa azu jamewo azu kenisa mofru irabau you know be limuida
family. Monday house, y'all.